Welcome in, everybody, to a Thursday morning edition of Locked On Knicks. I am Alex Wolf, and I am your solo host today because Gavin had to be out late covering a game or something. So just me, just treated to little old me. The Knicks lost 107-96 to the Suns tonight. Not a great loss overall. I'm going to get into it in a minute here. We'll kind of just go over the general game recap. Then I'll give you some updates on how Mitch did, how DeAndre Jordan did in his return, Dotson, Trier, etc. Let you know how everybody did tonight. And we'll just kind of end off with some little extra notes. I thought Clyde had a pretty fun game as far as commentary goes, so I will get into those couple little points as well. All that's coming up in just a minute here on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, counting at one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
Milikina. What he does is contagious.
Oh, Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives.
Becomes infectious.
All right, welcome in, everybody. I am Alex Wolf. As I said, going solo today. Just me. Just get to listen to my velvety smooth voice for, I don't know, probably about 20 minutes, because I don't know if I can quite go longer than that today, honestly. It was not a great game from the Knicks overall. Again, they lost 107-96 to the Suns. In the first quarter, seemed like the Knicks were, against all odds, going to win this one, despite the fact that the Suns were kind of riding hot and the Knicks were riding pretty cold going into this one. But, you know, it was one of those deals where the Suns were shooting like 30% from the floor through the first quarter. The Knicks were shooting better than that, but they turned the ball over like first quarter turnovers. They had 9 and wound up with, I think it was 16 in the first half. And that was kind of what wound up doing them in. The first quarter, they won 22-16, but they would go into the half down 2 points. And then the third quarter, I mean, they just reached a certain point of the game where they couldn't defend anything. Devin Booker started going off on them. He had a season-high 41 points for the night. So it just really was not a great game for the Knicks. Great for the tank, though, I'll tell you that much. I mean, between this one and losing to the Cavs last week, the Knicks have positioned themselves pretty well. They now have, I think it's a game and a half on the Suns in the tank standings. Or maybe it's 2.5 games, because they were a half game up going into today. And then I think by them, the Knicks losing and the Suns winning, I think that creates 2 games worth of space between the two. So it could be even better than we thought. But yeah, just in general, not a great effort. They finished with 21 turnovers overall. That was definitely the key point of the game, was the turnovers. If the Knicks could have controlled themselves a little more and not turned the ball over quite so much, it probably would have been a totally different game. If you look at their shooting numbers overall, they shot 45.5% from the field and 40% from three for the game, which really isn't too bad. I mean, the one thing with the three-pointers is that they barely took any. They only took 15 for the whole game and made 6 of them. So I guess kind of hard to compete with a team like the Suns, who wound up making 12 out of 29 of their three-pointers when you yourself were only taking 15. But, you know, again, a large part of that had to do with Devin Booker having such a good night. I mean, Devin Booker by himself was 14 of 23, hit 6 of 10 threes. I mean, he himself matched the Knicks' three-point production just by himself. So that certainly didn't help matters along. But, yeah, I mean, it was just Devin Booker, like, not to stick on him too long. I'm sure, you know, y'all want to hear about the Knicks because this is Locked On Knicks, but Booker just really crushed the Knicks, like, basically by himself. He had 23 points in the first half, 18 points in the second half. He, up to his career to date, like prior to tonight's game, he had averaged 25 points per game versus the Knicks for his career, which is the third highest average versus any individual team. The top two are the Celtics, and those are, that's the team that he scored 70 points against, his career high, and the Sixers. So I guess he just really does not like the Atlantic Division. I think the Knicks may have actually jumped the Sixers after tonight, because 41 into whatever, I think he had like seven career games against the Knicks prior to tonight. And the Sixers, I think he averaged 27 points. The Knicks, he averaged 25. But whatever. Yeah, Devin Booker, certified Knick killer, for sure. The big turnaround by the Suns in the second half by basically everyone not named Devin Booker was probably the biggest part of everything, you know, turning over in the second half there, where the Knicks just got, like, run off the floor in the third quarter. The Suns were shooting 43.9%. from the floor and 25% from three in the first half, and then in the second half shot 52.5% from the floor and 52.9% from three, which is absurd. So that's, you know, if you need an answer as to why the Knicks lost, it's definitely defense and the fact that, you know, they were giving up so many three balls in the second half and at such a high percentage. Kelly Oubre, who's, you know, one of the newest Suns after the trade deadline, he also had 18 points. He definitely seems like he's a keeper. I'm kind of envious of them having him because he's like he doesn't seem super high usage, but he's fairly efficient. At least it seems like he has been lately for them. And he's definitely a really good defender too. So he was cool to watch. But like, yeah, the Knicks in general, super, super sloppy. Emmanuel Mudiay had a true Mudiay game. He only shot, it was 1 for 4 from the floor, and he had 5 turnovers, generally played no defense, generally was not getting the offense moving at all. And it was kind of like just the perfect, terrible Emmanuel Mudiay game as far as that goes. And you know, the Knicks, as I already mentioned, you know, basically just stopped playing defense in that second half, and minus Mitchell Robinson, who obviously is always pretty good, but all in all, just pretty shitty game, if we're being totally straight about it. I don't want to run on too much longer just about the general vibe of the game, because I think I've gone pretty well into it here, but I'll take my first break here, and then I'll come back. I'll give you guys some, you know, player-by-player breakdowns, because there was, you know, as with every game, there was some small positives, even if they weren't abundant in this one. So I'll get into that when I get back to Locked On Knicks. Welcome back into Locked On Knicks. I am Alex Wolf, going solo today. As I mentioned, Gavin taking the night off, and that's cool. I haven't done a solo show in a while, so good to get one in every once in a while. You know, it's good practice, I guess. Even if I miss him, I miss having Gavin, having someone to bounce things off of. You should see me right now. I'm just like sitting in my quote unquote recording studio talking to myself, but you guys will listen. So it's cool. So before I get into anything else, I should bring up, the Knicks Twitter viewing party again. I've brought this up on a couple shows already, but, next Friday, March 15th, there is going to be a viewing party. Locked On Knicks is hosting. Only I'm going to be able to make it, unfortunately. No Gavin. But it's Locked On Knicks. My blog, Posting and Toasting. A bunch of us will be there from that site. Knicks Film School will be JB and Jonathan Macri from there. Knicks Fan TV, Nick Time Show. So CP and Jay Ellis from Knicks Fan TV. They'll be there. Gotham Sports Network, Jeremy Cohen, I think Andrew Claudio are both going to be there. And the Hard Knicks Life podcast with Barry and Craig. They will be there as well. So it's going to be a really good time. It's March 15th, 8:30 against the Spurs. The bar is called John Sullivan's. It's at 210 West 35th Street in Midtown. According to Gavin, it's an Arizona State bar, which I didn't realize at all, but that's kind of funny and ironic. And you should definitely bring cash with you. Last time we did a 50-50 raffle and had some shirts and a jersey and other things to raffle off. So we'll definitely be doing that. And the bar itself is running $8 cash beer, wine, and well drinks all night. And if any cash drink sales, they will give 25% to us, which we will relay to the Garden of Dreams Foundation, which is the Make-A-Wish-esque organization run by Madison Square Garden that, you know, takes kids that typically terminally ill kids and gives them, you know, memorable experiences with MSG, you know, teams, players, whatever. So really good cause. It's a really good time. We did one of these back in November. It was a win against the Mavericks pre-Porzingis time. And it was just honestly a blast. And, you know, even if the Knicks wind up losing, it's fun to hang with a bunch of Knicks fans and watch it. So definitely hope to see all of you there. But at any rate, I'll get back into reviewing this game. So I've already talked enough about Devin Booker and generally the Knicks' ineptitude in this one. But I'll talk about Mitch first. You know, this is, of course, Locked On Mitchell Robinson. So Mitch had 8 points, 8 rebounds, 4 blocks, and 2 steals. He only played 22 minutes, but not too shabby of a stat line for him. I definitely noticed he shot 3-7 from the floor, which isn't his best, obviously. And that was a little uncharacteristic. And to me, it seemed like the Suns, and this was maybe the first team that I've seen truly do this in kind of the Mitchell Robinson hot streak here. They seem to be making like a real concerted effort to block off lobs to him. Like they just wanted a body between Mitchell Robinson and the hoop at all times when it came like to pick and roll situations and whatever. And it seemed to work pretty well. He couldn't get a lob off all night. And it was just kind of, he looked on offense, at least to me, he finally looked a tiny bit uncomfortable. But I think that's good for him, if we're being totally honest. Like, I think that, first off, it means that teams are taking him seriously enough now to start seeing him as, like, a real threat on the offensive end of the floor because of his, like, vertical ability. And then, secondly, like, Mitch, I think, has shown a really great ability to learn on the fly and to, you know, learn from things that he's seeing on the court and like very quickly have, you know, a quick turnaround time of making adjustments that, you know, lead to him making a greater impact out there. So I'm kind of intrigued to see like if another team brings out the same strategy that the Suns did, where they kind of really sell out on trying to keep Mitch away from, you know, getting alley-oop passes, what sort of wrinkles we might start seeing in Mitch's game to kind of make up for that. Cause he definitely always seems to have an answer. Or at least to this point in his career he has. So that'll be interesting to see. I really liked his rebounding, though. The 8 rebounds in 22 minutes, I mean, that's a pretty solid per-minute rate. I think I mentioned this on the podcast that just came out yesterday with Tom Piccolo, but something about Mitch is, you know, the way that he's rebounding the ball, and I mean, I'm no expert, but based off like footage that I've seen and stuff, I get like this kind of Dennis Rodman-y vibe. Like obviously not quite at Rodman's level because he's one of the best rebounders like ever. But Robinson, you know, despite the fact that he still needs to bulk out a lot to be able to like truly compete with the centers in the NBA, he seems to just kind of wiggle in and find his rebounds no matter what now, which is good to see because, you know, earlier in the season he was getting out positioned and just kind of out muscled, and that was really limiting what he could do on the rebounding end of things. And now he seems to be flirting with a double double pretty much every single game, at least ones that he gets minutes. So that's certainly really promising to me. And then as far as, you know, the blocks, he had 4 blocks, which, you know, he just continues his astounding per minute block rate, which, you know, is out of this world. And, you know, he's by the time the season's over, he could very well be, you know, almost leading the league in blocks at the rate that he's going. I don't know if he's going to meet minimum qualifiers and all that stuff, but he's definitely been killing it in that respect. He on his first block, relatively shortly after he checked into the game, he stuffed Ayton, DeAndre Ayton, the top pick of the draft, who's had a pretty good rookie campaign himself. Stuffed him on like a traditional back down post up opportunity. Ayton tried to kind of establish position on Mitch and pull off a little turnaround, and Mitch, like, to his credit, was great. It was like, it was probably one of my favorite sequences of his for the night, because he just kind of stood his ground, was patient, and then Ayton tried to turn around, and I believe Mitch swatted it with his left hand, like his kind of signature move, and you know, stuffed the Ayton attempt there. So that one was great. He also blocked another three-pointer. He blocked a three-pointer by Troy Daniels. He blocked Devin Booker on one shot, and then I forget who the last one was, if we're being totally honest, but it was impressive. You know, four blocks again. You just can't make this shit up. Like, Mitch is just so good on defense, plus two steals. I think one that, like, almost could have been called a block was called a steal instead, because someone was driving the lane and looked like they were about into the motion to start trying to put up a shot, but Mitch kind of just intercepted it, and I guess they called it a steal. I made a remark on the posting and toasting Twitter that I thought that it was kind of like a textbook definition of a stock. Like, that's kind of like the scouting and film, you know, analysis, whatever term for steals plus blocks, like, because you want to see players getting a high number of stocks per game. And that one, I just thought, when I watched it again, I was like, wow, that's like the definition of a stock, because I'm actually not sure if that was a steal or a block. Still impressive either way, because he ripped it away from someone driving down the lane in a situation that didn't seem like he would be able to, which is always cool. Mitch just continually defies the believable. But I'll wrap up on Mitch. I'd like to just give a shout out to Vonleh and to DeAndre Jordan. Vonleh had 15 points, only two rebounds, so didn't continue his own stretch of nearly getting double-doubles for the last, like, four games. And he had a block. It was actually a really nice block that led to a Mitch and one on the other end in transition. But he's continuing his resurgence, Vonleh. He hit another three-pointer in this one, and if I'm not mistaken, he was one of two again, so technically speaking, 50% from three. I'm glad that he doesn't seem to be forcing it with the threes anymore. He seems to only be shooting them, like, when he's open and thinks that he can legitimately make them, so that's definitely promising. But all in all, he shot 6 of 10 from the floor. I was impressed with him. You know what I mean? He was like using his post game well, his little like baby hook, just kind of like the textbook what you like to see from Vonleh. Played good defense by and large. Again, didn't really get the rebounds that you know him for, but kind of the reason for that is that DeAndre Jordan, in his comeback, he got to start, played actually a couple more minutes than Mitch. He had 17 points, 14 rebounds, 2 blocks, shot 7 of 8 from the floor. If I'm being totally straight, like, it's a little hard to get all that excited for DeAndre Jordan when he's playing 24 minutes to Mitch's 22. But it was a good return for him. You know, I'm not going to hate on him, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like a bad thing to have DeAndre Jordan out there eating up some minutes. I felt almost like it came at the expense of Mitch at a couple times today. And I really just would rather see Mitch out there with the starter players, you know, because I think that those are the guys that he's going to need to develop chemistry with long term to be successful. But it's kind of nitpicky, I guess. I don't know. I mean, as long as Mitch is getting time out there, which he's been getting at minimum like 20 to 22 minutes a game lately, then I guess, you know, it's fine. I guess if DeAndre Jordan's going to remain in there as like the one true veteran presence in the starting lineup or whatever to kind of like quote unquote quarterback the D for all that was good for tonight. But it was cool. I think probably Jordan's, at least to me, the best highlight was he kind of had like a welcome back dunk. He had like this nice little backdoor cut, one of the first possessions of the game, and threw down like a big two-hander with like the pelvic thrust thrown in at the end, not necessarily like hanging on the rim, but he came in with some force and kind of like pelvic thrusted his way through the dunk. And those are always fun. So I enjoyed watching that. And he just seemed healthy, which is good too. Definitely doesn't seem like he rushed back. He didn't seem hampered at all. So, you know, hopefully he'll be healthy for the rest of the year and they can, you know, that way he can sort of keep being a mentor to Mitch, but more so in like a hands-on and like on the court demonstrative kind of way rather than just like coaching him from the bench. So that's kind of my all-in-all take on Jordan. I'm going to take another break here and I'll come back. I'll talk about Damian Dotson, Alonzo Trier, Dennis Smith Jr., Moutier and Kevin Knox real quick, and then just a couple Clydeisms from the game. And then we'll wrap up this solo show on what was ultimately kind of a cruddy game. So all that and more coming up when I come back. Third and final segment, getting back into it. Knicks lost on the road, 107-96 to the Suns. We've already established that. Horrible game. You know, you don't literally versus the Knicks are the worst team in the league. They're facing the second worst team in the league, and they just got shelled. It was just awful, awful game. But there's a couple more bright spots, I thought, or like one and a half more bright spots other than the ones I've already mentioned with Mitchell Robinson and Vonleh and DeAndre Jordan. Damian Dotson, kind of quietly because he really came on in garbage time, kind of. He shot 6 of 12. He had 15 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. He started off slow. I think he started the game 2 of 7 or something like that. And kind of looked like it was going to be one of those weird off nights for Dotson. And then just kind of came on towards the end. Like I said, most of it came in garbage time, so I don't know, whatever, put as much stock into that as you want, I guess, or as little stock, because like the game was basically decided by the end of the third quarter, and like most of Dotson's scoring, like he hit a couple three-pointers in the fourth, and I think he hit a layup as well. But most of his scoring came, you know, in the late third to fourth quarter, and the game was like, by the time you hit about the halfway point of the third quarter, the game was basically decided already. But he ran some nice little curls and stuff. He played good defense, got a bunch of rebounds. It's just a shame that most of the good parts came when the game was already out of hand. And it's, you know, especially for a player like Dotson, where you kind of already know what he can do well and stuff. That having him do stuff in garbage time doesn't do as much for me as like even if like Knox had gone out there and done stuff in garbage time, because I've seen Dotson put up garbage time stats before. Like he's kind of to the point where I want him to just start putting up normal time stats consistently. And he's still been like, for a guy with like as good of mechanics as he has and like as much consistency to his form and everything else, it's just kind of strange to me that he runs so hot and cold and has these like peaks and valleys. But hopefully it'll continue to, you know, sort itself out as things go along. And then Dennis Smith Jr., Gavin would be really happy because we were just talking about last show about how many minutes, or maybe it was two shows ago, about how many minutes we want Dennis Smith to play. And Gavin was like, I want him to play like 30 to 40 minutes, or I think he said like 35 to 40 minutes every single game, which I thought was maybe a little high. But lo and behold, Smith played 37 minutes in this game. He had 15 points on 6 of 14 shooting. He had 6 assists. So another, I've remarked before, not all of them are like perfect, like great assists, but at the very least, like you've got a guy now on the Knicks finally that can basically hand out 5 assists on any given night, 5 plus assists on any given night. And, you know, it's becoming more and more routine that happens now. So that's certainly good to see. He definitely had some struggles on defense, but like everybody had struggles on defense in this game. So it is what it is. I thought that he kind of had his struggles getting things going too, like getting the offense moving and cohesive. But, you know, it's an imperfect team, you know, with Smith has still only been around for like 10, 12 games now, something like that. Maybe not even that many. So, you know, it's all going to come in time. But I still thought Smith, he earned playing 37 minutes tonight because he was definitely, by far the best Knicks point guard available today. And he played like it. Also, he made a couple pull-ups in rhythm. He kind of had a little bit of a garbage time run, too, like Dotson did. But, you know, again, is what it is. But he made a couple pull-ups. He had a pull-up three and a pull-up, or kind of a step back from two. But in both cases, his jumper looked pretty fluid. So I was encouraged by that, at least. I don't know how much work he's going to be able to do on it in season here to kind of work out the hitch in his shot and all that. But definitely was some releases today where it looked more fluid than I think it's looked over the last few games when he's kind of struggled a little bit more. So that was good. As far as negatives, it's not really a huge negative, but Alonzo Trier kind of finally fell back down to earth a little bit. Only shot 3 of 9, had 12 points, but he did get 5 of 6 to go from the free throw line. So still 6 free throw attempts for him is pretty impressive. I think he might have just had some jitters. He had some family in the crowd. His mom was in the crowd in particular because he went to college at Arizona. And so, you know, had, I guess, some friends and or family around that area. I know he grew up around Seattle, I think it was. So I don't know how his family split is or whatever, but if maybe that influenced his decision to go to Arizona for college, whatever. But all in all, I know his mom was there and definitely some other family. So that was cool. But he was, you know, he was whatever, but he was due. He was due to kind of have an off shooting night. So I'm not going to read too much into it. Hopefully, he still, like I said, still managed to crack double digits and still shot well from the free throw line. So that's a positive. Moutier and Knox, though, both really bad. Moutier was 1 of 4 from the floor, 5 turnovers. I already briefly touched on him. I'm not gonna talk about him too much because I don't care to. He was a huge mess, honestly. It was the perfect representation of the Moutier experience. He basically, I don't know, man. It was it felt for a little bit he couldn't even bring the ball down the floor without fumbling it out of his hands or just making a piss poor decision and, you know, tossing it somewhere else. Which credit to Fizdale for all of his Moutier love, managed to hold himself to only playing Moutier for 17 minutes in this game. So I guess that's a positive in and of itself, but yeah, it was horrible, horrible Moutier game. One of those where you watch it and you're like, yeah, I really hope that he's not on the Knicks next year, that I don't have to keep watching this guy. And then Kevin Knox, similarly, maybe not quite as bad as Moutier. Didn't have a great game either. He was a total sieve on defense in the second half in particular. Knox was quote-unquote playing defense on Devin Booker for a lot of while Booker was torching the Knicks in the second quarter, which I guess maybe was part of Fizdale's idea to test him or whatever and, you know, give him a tough assignment, but it was ugly. It was not a good one. And he only shot 1 of 5 from the floor. He did manage to get 7 points because he got 6 free throw attempts, shot 5 of 6 from the line, but yeah, not a good game for Knox either. And again, not a thing that I care to sit here and talk about for too long because I really just, Knox's play was not that great. I will say the very first play of the game was at least entertaining from him. He got a post-up opportunity kind of and back down. I think it was Oubre and, took a little baby hook over him in the post and it went in. And that was his one field goal for the night. So that was good. First take was good. The rest of it, not so good. I'll just do a quick little overtime segment dedicated to Clyde because I thought Clyde was in rare form tonight. First thing was he totally burned the Suns and their fans because Breen was talking about Trier was getting ready to check in and the fans were kind of you could hear like a contingent of fans kind of cheering for him. And so Breen explained like, oh, you know, yeah, Trier has family in town, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, he's got his mom here and, you know, he had to get a whole bunch of tickets for the game, I know. And Kladjezik's comment, he goes, yeah, well, the Suns obviously aren't selling out, so shouldn't have been too difficult for him. And I was just like, I love Clyde. He's like the best subtle burner. And I really enjoyed that. And then also on the point of Trier's mom, Trier's mom, very pretty. She looks, I don't know how old she is, but she looks like she could be like early 30s, to be totally honest. And so Clyde, you know, Breen like kind of introduced his mom because they showed her on the camera and he's like, yeah, you know, there's Alonzo Trier's mom sitting in the stands. And Clyde goes, oh, looks like it could be his sister. And I'm like, ah, Clyde, you sly devil. Like, you are so smooth. I could just imagine Clyde trying to, like, smooth talk his way up to Alonzo Trier's mom after the game. But, yeah, that was just another funny moment. But at any rate, that's all I got. I've already gone. Jesus Christ, how long did I go? Like, I think I went, like, 30 minutes here. And that's absurd because I was thinking that I'd be lucky to scrape 20. So I guess I did a good job, but this has been Locked On Knicks. This was Alex Wolf going solo, breaking down the Knicks loss to the Suns. Be sure next time you get in your car to ask your car to play podcast Locked On Knicks. If you want to listen to us on the go, you can also ask like your Siri or Google Assistant to do that for you. You can ask your Alexa or your Google Home speaker to do that for you. Anywhere where you can ask something to do something for you, you just say play podcast Locked On Knicks and it'll pull it up for you and get that Locked On Knicks goodness in your ear. Other than that, like I said, come to the meetup. Definitely would like to see you all there. And that's it for today, guys. All right. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope I didn't bore you to death with my solo ramblings. And that's all I got. All right. Peace out, guys. Have a good day.